Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Michael, thanks for bringing me live. I mostly just wanted to tell folks that we've had a technical difficulty, I think, with our guest not being able to call in.
Okay.
So
great.
I just didn't want to leave folks hanging. But actually, I can tell you a little bit about what we were going to look at, and we'll have a chance to look at it again because it doesn't give it away. But
great.
We realized recently that it's June. And so we're halfway through the year of deepening practice.
Wow.
Kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And so we thought it would be really fun to do a little series sort of over the next weeks or months, talking to people about what they've seen about how their practice has deepened and what are
great.
Some of the components. So I'm not going to give anything about it away, but we had a really fun sort of lineup with this person who has had a particular breakthrough in this one area in his practice and was going to talk to us about that. But it could be something that people are just considering as they're looking at that and perhaps wanting to be a guest on the show in the next weeks.
Wow. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
So mostly I just wanted to tell you that, and I'm pretty excited about it. So if someone wants to participate, they're welcome to send us an email to Open Air. And I guess it's almost time for the show.
Yes. So if I'm hearing you correctly, folks send an email to openair@livingcompassion.org if they're interested in talking about what they've seen around their year of deepening practice.
Yeah, like a particular element or something. Again, I don't want to give it away, but the thing that was fun about what we're going to talk with this person about was there's this kind of one thing that he's really seen in his practice and really had sort of blossom in this year. And I know for me, when I look at it, there are certain things I brought into the year, certain intentions I brought into the year, and how, in fact, I was just talking about it in group the other day. One of them was wanting to kind of look at not needing to plan so much, but just letting life lead.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realized the other day, you know what? I've kind of stopped making to-do lists. And it was one of those things where I didn't set out to do that. You know, there was no sort of goal around, I'm going to stop making to-do lists. But realizing that a process that used to drive the life, in a sense, is not in the driver's seat anymore. And I think it's just really fun to stop and look at, you know, often the changes are incremental, and so we don't see them until suddenly we just sort of wake up to it. So anyway, that's one of the things that sparked me to do a little series on that, is to give people the gift of just stopping to consider, what has changed in this year of deepening practice?
Yeah. Interesting question.
So I'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Jen.
Sorry about that. Thanks, Michael.
No problem. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
I thought maybe I could get it in there first. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I'm great.
Good summer.
You having a good summer? Grateful to be alive.
Yeah, no kidding. that's the best perspective to keep in mind for enjoying anything, isn't it?
Yeah. It's
glad
funny.
I'm here to be having this experience.
Yes. Funny, sometimes in the morning I'll be excited talking to my young boys and say, hey, I'm still alive. Great.
They probably look at you like, because they probably think that you're kind of older than Methuselah, right? It's really a miracle that you are still alive.
Yes.
Little do they know.
Yes. Blessings abound.
Yes, yes, yes.
I have some announcements here, Sherry.
All right.
We have a new Rest and Be Thankful weekend retreat at the monastery coming up the weekend of July 13 through 15.
Yes. And do you think people know what that's about? Is there a nice write-up that goes with it? Or
there's a little write-up, or if you want to start in, please do so.
Well, you know, one of the things that people talk about when they come to the monastery is what a great refuge from the noise and busyness of the world. And so usually the way people are there is on a retreat, and which is, you know, nice, but it can be also kind of busy, and, you know, homework and sessions. And so to have a time when people can be on the equivalent of a private retreat, so there are things that they can certainly participate in, but mostly it's participating in the silence and solitude that's there while somebody fixes your food for you and like that. And so you can participate in a yoga class if you want, or you can do a little mini workshop that will be offered on one of the mornings or afternoons, but your schedule is really your own. And so we're excited to see if people sort of spark to that. We used to do private retreats, and then it got kind of difficult because there were so many, you know, we would have people on the property who didn't know the guidelines or how things worked, or it was really a big energy consumption feature for the people who live there. So we thought, well, let's have the equivalent of a private retreat, but have it be a retreat on the schedule. So then all of us who are there turn attention to the kitchen and maintaining things for people and providing for them. And it's not just somebody sort of left on their own to figure out the structure. So, yeah, we're eager to see if it speaks to a need that people have.
Great. Great. Sounds wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Also coming up is the Your Practice Retreat. That's July 18th through 25th. And it's designed for those who've been with practice for a while and gives these folks the opportunity to practice as a monk for a week.
Mm. And practice as monks with a, I happen to know something about what's going to go on, so practice as monks with a really fun schedule.
Great. Great. Practice as monks with a really fun schedule. Sounds great. And folks can visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to read more or to sign up.
Yeah. And if they're in Colorado or would like to come to Colorado, the weekend of, what is it, July something or other? 13,
yes.
14, 15, something?
Yes. I don't have it in front of me in this moment.
Shambhala Mountain Center, I think, is the place.
Great. Great. How about I look up the dates and then bring it after the first caller?
Thank you.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Let's get started. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Greta.
Hey, Greta.
Hi.
Hi. I'm doing okay.
Okay. I wasn't sure you heard that. What's going on?
I've been doing my little mini retreat that I was fortunate enough to have my attention drawn to these not what but how workshop CDs that were made a few years ago from a retreat that I attended.
Hmm.
And that,
so this is a, just to catch people up, this is an enforced retreat.
Right. I'm having a retreat at home taking care of my husband after his back surgery.
Yeah. And so, and it wasn't anything you were planning on or necessarily chose, but it's turning out to be kind of a great opportunity.
Yes. And what I saw today was I've been listening along with the retreat. And at some point, what I'm seeing, especially today, is I'm hearing a conversation that I'm starting to get overwhelmed because I'm not doing the retreat as you would if you were on a retreat, in the sense that I'm not stopping and doing all the exercises as they're offered on the, you know, on my headphones.
Uh-huh.
So I've been using it just to bring me back to the present and to pay attention to the discussions, but then I was starting to hear this conversation that said, oh, well, you're really not, you know, you're not getting the benefit because you're not doing it. And I realized that that's not really true. I am practicing with one component, which is the process content piece.
Yes. And the other thing, of course, that's always good to see is that that expert on everything that lives inside your head knows everything that you need to be told about how to gain the most benefit from your awareness practice. Not.
Yeah. So the thing that I was noticing just before the call, though, is how, you know, when you're stressed out, I mean, I have my own health issue, which is more present for me, really, because I'm inside it than what's going on with my husband, but I'm really stressed out, and the voices are nonstop at all level, whether they're at the most subtle or the most obvious. And what I have seen is really the only thing left for me is sort of putting my faith in practice, and however I can, wherever I am, coming back to the breath.
So may I ask you something about that?
Mm-hmm.
So the stress is about, so I mean, there you are. You have your health stuff going on. Now you've got a husband who has just had surgery, and so you're helping and supporting him. Where's the stress coming from?
What I see is there are a lot of stories that generate a lot of fear. So, for example, a story that went through yesterday that was building for a few days was we went back to the surgeon and that he wasn't going to give us enough pain medication to get my husband to the point where he could wean himself off of it. And because I have issues with pain, that just got me, there's a lot of juice in that story. And, you know, a couple times I felt my whole body get revved up as I got caught in that story.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it's the classic find a weak spot and then the voices begin to work on that until they work you up into a state over it.
Right. And they are doing that on every front. That's kind of what I was meaning by saying the voices are operating everywhere, every
uh-huh.
way they possibly can. Every, you know, I'm inadequate. I can't get from here to there. You know, when you get, you know, we're kind of home alone. And so then I just keep getting told how, you know, I'm not functional and I'm not going to be able to do all these things that I need to do to, you know, do the errands and go to the doctor and just on every front, you know, they're just nonstop.
God almighty. And so, as you say, the only way out of this for you is to get into the present moment and trust that life is going to take care of both of you in whatever way life takes care of you.
Right. And I've gotten myself into a lot of the fix I'm in trying to figure it out. And so I know that that's not the avenue to go. And yet it's a constant process that, you know, my mind just keeps looping back to, well, if I could just figure it out, I'd get the right, you know, I'd know what to do.
Right.
And so
I
see that one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's that's kind of a disidentified description of what goes on, right? Because
mm-hmm.
in the moment, it's a okay. I need to do this, and I need to take care of that. And what about that? And don't forget,
right?
That creates this belief that there is some way I can get on top of this, so that we'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes are really high.
The stakes are life and death in so many ways.
Yeah. And so it seems to me, you know, of course, as you know, this is why we practice turning the attention, right? Because when we get ourselves into a situation, or find ourselves, it's not necessarily we get ourselves into, but we find ourselves in a situation like this where there's nothing we can do. So we're such doers,
mm-hmm.
and then there's nothing that we can do. The only hope for us is to be able to find the refuge of putting our attention where we want it to be. And if we don't have a really strong practice of that, a really well-developed ability to do that, then we are just kind of those fish that are being shot in that barrel. You know, there's nowhere for us to go to get away. So it seems to me that what you're closing in on is the mantra of thy will be done. That's really the refuge that is available to you, and the only hope for you is to really realize that you do not have control, that you can't make anything happen, and that all you can do is be with the people in the moment with as much loving kindness and compassion as you can muster.
Yeah, I didn't. I think there are different times where that's kind of come through, but that resonated with me just now as you said it. And what I've seen is I really have had this sort of weak attitude towards practice that, you know, somehow how I was turning my attention was, you know, it was okay. But what I'm seeing is the need to really keep my commitments firmly and to build my willingness, because they're really, as you said, otherwise you're just the fish in the barrel. Without that willingness to keep coming back time and time again, I would just give up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And sadly, of course, that's what happens to a lot of people. You know, it's the belief that, you know, I will be saved in the final reel, and that some sort of miracle is going to happen, and so I don't really need to learn to be with myself. You know, not at the level that these crazy people are talking about. You know, it's okay, and you know, I've always been all right, and so it probably will be. And then we find ourselves in these places where good enough isn't, and so it's I don't know where. I haven't thought about this in years. It may be in the key, but when you're drowning, it's your very best opportunity to learn to swim, because nothing else is more important. And boy, that strikes me as very true in this situation. You know, there's never going to be a more compelling time to learn to direct your attention, because it's true that so many people go along with, oh, it's going to be okay, and then when they find out it isn't okay, the only alternative is to give up, to just quit, check out. And we just don't. In fact, I will tell you that I've had a big practice week myself. There's a woman who was around our practice for a while, a friend actually, and you know, we'd come on retreats mostly just to, you know, just keep current, see what I'm up to, that sort of thing. But she concluded that, you know, it really wasn't for her. I mean, she had a lot of things that she wants to do, and busy and great life and active and all of this sort of thing. And she just committed suicide a few days ago because her life, suddenly she wasn't able to pursue all those exciting things that she had been pursuing. And she had no resources. She had nowhere to turn. And the sadness that I feel for that, you know, making that kind of decision that, oh, well, surely I'll be all right no matter what. And to realize that there's so much of us that needs care, that needs constant compassion and loving kindness, and not in an egocentric way, but just vulnerable, innocent, defenseless aspects that really do need care and support and nurturing, and that to ignore that to be distracted by all of the fun and interesting things in life that are available, is really counting on that it's all magically going to work out somehow.
Well, I'm extremely grateful for all the support, and I've been asking for more support because I know I can't do it alone, and between all the practice opportunities and just knowing that I have practice, I mean, that's kind of what I was saying, you know.
Yes.
If I didn't have that, I would feel like that person that,
oh, yes,
you know, it's so sad that you would have this empty hole,
yes,
regardless of where I was in my life. If without practice, I would feel like I had an empty space. But with practice, I have at least enough experiences where I know that life is caring for me, even in the throes of the dark room when,
yes,
I can't hear anything else.
Yes, yes, yes. What a comfort, huh?
It is. It is. It's a great blessing. So thank you very much, Sherry, for your support, and Sangha and Michael for keeping the show going.
Well, you are very welcome. You stay in touch with us, okay?
I will. Good night.
He's sending you a lot of strength and energy. Both of
Thank
you.
Thank you. Well, he's on the mend, so that part is good. One level I can let go.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Good night. Thank
Good
you.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Greta. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
Hey.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Stephen from South Carolina. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, I'm fair to Midland. The old cotton farmers around here used to say fair to Midland.
Uh-huh.
And that's about all I can say. There's been a lot going on, although my outward external life is very simple. There's been a lot of stuff going on inside, and I hardly know which aspect of it to talk about now. But let me open my mouth and see what comes out.
I see who needs to be expressed right now.
I've really been really stuck for a while now, probably even years, around the subject of work. For about 7 or 8 years now, I've been on a disability, and I have about, you know, small disability income, about $20,000 or $25,000 a year, and have been slowly coming out of a big hole that I was in with some problems like chronic fatigue that were impossible for conventional medicine to diagnose. And to make a long story short, I've been feeling the last year or so that I've gotten over most of that and could really physically go to work now, and I really feel like I need to, because I'm getting expenses now, like I need a bunch of dental work that I can't afford, and the rents are going sky high in this area, and so there's some external pressure coming to bear to sort of push me back in the direction of work. But the problem I have with it is that, first of all, the disability was related to a lot of stress at the last job, and even beyond that, to a lot of very vague interpersonal problems at work, where the boss would say things like, well, the business clients say that they don't like to work with you, and he'd say vague things like that to keep me on edge. And then finally, when I pressed him about, well, what specifically do they say? Because I really need something definite that I can do to address this. And he just sort of mumbled and didn't say anything. And then a few days later, he came back and said, well, be less intense and try to smile more. And I thought that this was just totally unhelpful, but it seems to have been a pattern all my life that there would be just these vague interpersonal problems that nobody could really specify and that I could never get a handle on, and it would cause me to have feelings of rejection. Uh-huh. And so I've got this great amount of conditioning and karma now and fear of going back to work because I'm afraid that this pattern is going to repeat itself again. Okay?
Yeah.
So I've been working on this. I've been looking at it. I haven't just been sitting idly. I've been doing the best I could to get insight about it. And the insight that came through to me yesterday, which I was finally able to admit to myself, was, well, you know, the rejection is coming from you because there are manifestations of the common social conditioning in this country that just set me on edge and just caused me a lot of pain and discomfort. And so I go into social situations or situations at work, and it's just very painful to me. And then I think what happens is other people see that I don't like the way they're behaving, and so they decide that they don't like me, and they're going to reject me. And so at least I got the insight that it's coming from me.
Right.
And then,
okay.
And,
May
okay,
I?
You want to say something about that? Because there is a little bit more.
Okay, go ahead.
So the insight that I got today was, well, put yourself in social situations that you know that you can get out of at a moment's notice so that you'll feel safe enough to go into them to begin with, and just go into these situations and see if you can observe the process and just try to work with it by just going into it a little bit at a time and then withdrawing and going back and withdrawing, because I feel like going back into a work situation where I might feel trapped again is just a little bit too much right now.
Right. Okay.
What do you think, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that is exactly the right approach. And I would add one thing to it.
Okay.
And that is to do some work with the various aspects of yourself who are involved. So what I've heard so far is that there is somebody who is troubled by social conventions. This,
yes.
Which I would, if that were me, it would be a teenager. Old enough to kind of see how things work and have a fair amount of contempt for it. Not an adult, hasn't bought into the adult world, but and is not a child, but in that, you know, I'm going to see where I fit into this, and I don't like the way you people are doing it. So then, so that if you find somebody like that, and then you will very likely find somebody younger, somebody who really is afraid, who doesn't feel powerful and capable, not a grown-up at all, and doesn't have the kind of hostility of a teenager, who feels really vulnerable and not a lot of good information about how things work. Okay, and then there's somebody who feels the need to take responsibility for finances and that sort of thing, who may or may not be a grown-up. Okay, we don't want to assume that that's a grown-up, but possibly more grown-up than these other folks. And then the other person that I'm hoping that you're going to find is somebody who actually wants to be in relationship with other human beings. Somebody who can have insight into himself, can have insight into other people, can have a suspicion that we're all pretty much alike, and that messed up as we can be on occasion, we come from a place of goodness and that sort of thing. And when you find that guy, and he may look a lot like Center, then that's the person who's going to go into these situations. And he's going to take, maybe all at once if he's feeling really gutsy, or one at a time, these aspects of the personality who struggle in these situations. So that going there is an opportunity to work with those parts of yourself and work on those parts of yourself and gain insight in that way, but not let the ones who are so vulnerable be in that situation where they might just simply experience more kind of injury.
Well, can I ask you something about that? Because I have not had a great deal of success yet differentiating these various parts. So you said not letting the one who is vulnerable go into those situations. How would I ensure that that vulnerable one was not going into those situations?
Well, that's the magic of developing a relationship with them. So, you know, if I were going to do it, I'd be looking for pictures of myself, you know, at various ages where, you know, I could kind of get a sense, sort of remember when there was awareness of other people and being in relationship with them, you know, in grade school and needing to fit in and being aware of what other people thought of me and what I thought of them. And then I would probably look for that teenager who got to the, you know, I don't give a flying fig about any of you, and I wish you, you know, whatever that is, and like that, so that you start doing work with, building relationship with these folks. It's helpful to have names, find out what they want to be called, so that they become very real to you. And when you go into a situation, you can ask, you know, if it's if you were Stevie when you were little, you know, you're going to invite little Stevie to come in and be with you in this situation, and you two are going to be talking about what's going on, and then you leave and you talk about what happened and how he felt and what he needed and that sort of thing. And then, you know, the teenager the same way, and the, you know, maybe the, you know, maybe there's a an emotionally young part but physically older part who may, you know, have first gone into work situations and felt awkward or uncomfortable and learned how to cope. And so you're just working with all of these different aspects of yourself as you practice in the way that you said, going in for a short period of time with somebody, going back, debriefing, you know, and eventually working toward the place that the centered you is the one who goes into these situations, and these other guys only have a relationship with you. They don't come to work. They don't come to parties. They don't show up at weddings. They don't, you know, they only have a relationship with the centered or mentor part of you.
That's yes,
okay?
Well,
so do some of that and let me know, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you a lot.
You're very welcome. Good luck. Okay. It's going to be fun, okay? I promise you that. They're great guys. You're going to enjoy getting to know them, and they're going to add immeasurably to your life. And they don't need to be interacting with the rest of the world. That's what Center is for.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Stephen. Well, thank you a lot, then.
Uh-huh. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Stephen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Some courageous folks out there, Sherry.
Indeed, indeed.
Yes.
Yep. And and some little folks who have been, young folks who have been waiting a long time for that kind of centered attention and focus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good work.
Good work. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
It's Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think open air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about open air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Ladima.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. This is my first time calling in.
Yes.
Quite accidentally, I might say, too.
Uh-oh. You were just trying to listen along and somebody unmuted you?
More or less.
Well, what are you up to?
Well, I've been looking at, I just discovered a person who's pretty much been in charge of my life, a good part of my life, and at least in the work area.
Uh-huh.
And I'm working with that, and I'm also a little bit experiencing sadness because I feel like much of my life has been what other people want for me or about survival.
Okay, so finding this person who's largely been in charge of your life or in charge of your life for a large part of it, and then realizing that much of what goes on with you is being focused on other people, what they want, and on survival.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I sense all those go together.
Yes. And I guess part of what prompted my call is that, you know, I had this great insight. There's this person, Kim, who's been in charge of my work life for, you know, 20, 25 years or so. And then the sadness comes along with it. And then talking with a counselor who basically, as I was talking about the sadness and different phases of my life where, and then I did this and then I did that, she basically stopped me and said, you know what, I need to stop you because you're really just seem to be caught in a story and in sadness and aren't really getting anywhere. It's like you've been sucked in.
Uh-huh.
And I've also been doing the recording and listening practice, and that's also where I mostly find sad people.
Inside?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, help me out a little bit. Tell me about this person who's been in charge of your work life.
Well, early on in my career, when it became apparent I was going to be laid off from my job and have to figure something out, I walked onto an elevator at the hospital where I worked, and there was a vice president in there. And I, you know, a woman who I just projected all kinds of awesome qualities onto. She's powerful. She makes a lot of money. She's good at what she does. She's, you know, all kinds of stuff that I made up about her because I didn't really even know her except a few times maybe that she might have spoken around, you know, the hospital. So so then when I felt like, what am I going to do? And I felt scared about work, or I didn't know how to get myself worked up for an interview or whatever, I would say, well, wonder what she would do. I wonder what Kim would do. How would she handle that? And then I would literally imagine myself her. And then that would kind of help me get worked up, help me dress. You know, I bought different clothes. I mean, it was kind of subtle, I think. But, you know, looking back, if it wasn't her, it was someone else. So it was, you know, kind of always imagining another person that I needed to be in order to be successful.
And then adopting those qualities and characteristics.
Uh-huh.
Manifesting them in order to accomplish.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, that actually seems kind of sensible.
Wow. Okay. Except for the work that I've been doing this whole time is not really what I set out to do with my life or what I really, it's not really what lights me up. I mean, pieces of it light me up, but most of it I just get through because Kim's been in charge and she just says keep going, and you know.
Well, now that's kind of a little shift there, because what I heard is somebody said, okay, we need Kim to come in and make things happen for us, and so Kim came in and made things happen. And now it sounds like there's somebody who doesn't want that to happen any longer. It seems to me like what you've learned is that you can kind of bring forth the qualities that you need to accomplish whatever it is that you want to accomplish. Seems to me that's what you learned in that situation. So what would you like to do now?
I'm not sure what I'd like to do now. Something that lights me up more than what I'm doing.
So
at the moment.
Now you need to find the person who is lit up about something.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
But in the meantime, it would seem like sadness about Kim doing what you asked her to do would be a strange way to say thank you.
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second.
It seems to me like what Kim really deserves at this point is a big thank you.
Ah.
Now, it may be true that the group gets together, or you from center or whatever, and decides that it might be a nice time for Kim to retire after having put in all these years of service, and that you really want to go in another direction now. But it's not like, you know, I'm not hearing that she elbowed anybody out of the way in order to take over your life.
Uh-huh.
She was actually invited in, and she did a darn good job of what she was asked to do.
I guess I hadn't thought of it that way.
So it seems to me the more interesting character in this little play is, who's here now? Right? Who has decided that it's sad that Kim was there doing this for all of these years? Who is that person?
Well, I think that's the person who has taken on an identity around being sad and feels she can't be happy and she isn't worthy of being happy.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And the insight I project you have in that into that is that the fact that she has an identity, that there's an identity of being unhappy, doesn't mean there's any unhappiness.
I don't exactly understand.
Okay. So in other words, if my identity is being sad, then I will always be able to find something to be sad about, no matter how far out I have to get to make it up.
Right.
So I will always be able to find the sad possibility in any situation. Because sad is what I do.
Right.
Yeah. So a lot of people that I meet really believe there's something wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that they really believe that, but that's not the same as there's something wrong with them.
Right. Okay.
So somebody can believe that they are inadequate or incompetent or unlovable or whatever, but that doesn't mean they are. It just means they're listening to a story that somebody is telling about how that is so.
Right.
So beliefs and what is so often have nothing to do with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the other point that, the other thing I think you were alluding to is that the person who is sad, there's a big difference between someone who is sad and someone who wants to be sad.
Mm.
So a person can be sad and then in all, you know, whatever relationship with that, fine to be sad while it's time to be sad. Fine to move through that when it's time to move through that, fine to be happy when it's a happy time. But the person who has an identity of being sad really doesn't want to be other than sad. And in fact, will cling to it, fight to hold on to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's much more interesting than the story would have us believe. So the stories are usually in place to keep us from exploring the facts. Do you know what I mean by that?
I can't see it right at this moment. I mean, it makes sense conceptually.
Yeah.
But I'm not seeing the direct application here.
Right. But I bet you will.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trusting you.
Yeah. Yeah. You will. You'll see how it works.
Okay. And I can listen to this again.
You certainly can. Yeah, and I hope you will, because again, when we get past the beliefs, when we get past the story, when we start exploring what else is there, the whole world opens up. That's what's being kept from us by the beliefs, by the assumptions, by the story. They are. Beliefs, assumptions, story are possibility deterrents.
Yes. Right.
And their primary function is to keep an identity safe.
Mm.
But that's not the same thing as keeping you safe or keeping me
right.
safe.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, often identities are kept safe at the human's expense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I'm hoping
yeah.
you're going to call again now that you have the hang of it.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks a lot, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Lavina. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, Sherry and Michael. I actually am wondering if it's okay if I don't give my name because I wanted to talk about something that's happening with my son.
Sure.
And
or you could
yeah.
make up an alias and then we'll be able to
okay.
clarify your
I'll use
alias.
My,
what is it?
Okay. I'll say it's Bernice.
Okay, Bernice. I like that.
And it seems like it's kind of a timely call, given the other calls that preceded. My son has psychiatric issues, and he's on his fifth hospitalization. And this time it was triggered by an attempted suicide. And I'm trembling a little bit. I guess I'm calling because I'm hoping to get a little light shown into this kind of very dark place that I'm in right now.
So.
And,
can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I guess fundamentally it's I have had this belief for most of my life that I shouldn't be a mother because I wouldn't be a good one, and this seems to be the ultimate outcome of it, and I'm being
here's your proof, huh?
Oh, absolutely. This is proof. And I'm, you know, getting battered about right
well,
now.
Well, just that concept is a battering.
Which one?
I shouldn't be a mother because I would be a bad one, and now my child has psychiatric difficulties. I mean, put those concepts together in one sentence, and that's a battering.
Yes.
Yeah. And so should I take from that you believe that your bad mothering is the cause of his psychiatric problems?
I think there's a belief that it's part of it. It's not the only cause, but it's somehow it's it's you know, it's involved. There's definitely that belief.
Uh-huh. That if you had been the right person, he would not be experiencing this now.
Possibly.
Uh-huh.
Possibly.
And what is his diagnosis?
Well, it just changed, like within the last couple of days. It was bipolar, depressed with psychotic features. Now it's schizoaffective disorder, bipolar, something or other. So it's kind of more in the heading in the schizophrenic direction, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of interesting. I was talking to a psychiatrist yesterday, and I was feeling so down in the dumps yesterday, and I was talking to her, and she said that something that he had never mentioned to me, because he talks to me a lot, and he's talked to me about suicide many times, and just this time I wasn't available for him to talk to me about it. And one thing he never mentioned to me was that he has been hearing voices, which she told me yesterday. And when she told me that, it was the strangest thing. It was, I almost felt relief when I heard it. And I thought of, you know, of you basically saying that we all hear voices. And so, you know, maybe this is an extreme. And not that we hear voices, but we have, you know, voices telling us, you know, different things. So this is kind of an extreme version of it. So I kind of have a, you know, I feel like I'm kind of rambling because I have so much going on internally right now. But
okay, let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
What is the payoff for believing that you're at fault in this?
I'm not sure. There must be something, because it's, you know, something I've carried. The bad mothering is something I've carried for, you know, since I've been a parent.
And is this your only child?
Yes, he's my only child.
Okay. Okay, so for it sounds like even before he came along, you had information that you shouldn't be a mother.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so, if I were to lead the witness here a little bit, is there an element of having some control in the situation if it's your fault?
Possibly. Maybe I can if I fix myself, I might be able to help him. Possibly. Yeah.
And if it's not your fault, and if it's not anyone's fault, it's kind of a helpless feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And what you said, did I hear you say earlier, thy will be done? Did you say that?
Yeah.
To another caller? Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was moving.
Yeah. What I mean, I don't know if this is true, but you'll look, and then maybe at some point you'll tell me. That in an odd kind of way, blaming yourself gives you a focus, kind of is a buffer against the just incredible, inexpressible sadness that you would feel.
Yeah. And I haven't been able to feel this. I've been kind of numb. I mean, it was just, you know, 2 weeks ago that this happened. So, it's been kind of interesting. I'm usually able to feel things, but I guess I'm about to. But I haven't been able to do anything in regards to practice. So I guess this is my
foray.
Yeah, that's right. So if you have any hints about what
well,
I might be able to do?
I mean, I suspect you're practicing a lot more than, you know, voices inside you would have you believe. But the, you know, in a situation like this, there, to me, there are two people who are suffering terribly, each equally worthy of, deserving of, however we want to say that, of unconditional love and support and care. And what we're conditioned to believe is that you're the mother and he's the child, and therefore you need to take yourself out of the equation so that you can just give everything that you have to him.
That's so true. Yeah.
And it's just not the case. I mean, it's true that we're conditioned that way, but it's not the case, because there is, there are lots of young people in you who are just as much in need of that unconditional love and that compassion as he is. And in the big scheme of things, are equal players. That if we step back, it's the relationship label that causes us to say, and one is more deserving or one or more needy or whatever it is, but it's just not true.
Mm.
And so that would be my encouragement for you with practice, is to find that place of unconditional love and acceptance, the compassion that embraces the girl, the woman, the mother, and extends then to the child. Because there, it's twofold. One, I just think it's the right thing to do. But second, I think it's on a one of those intuitive osmosis kind of levels, I think it's the best thing you can do for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
he is in touch with the unconditional, which is another discussion, but he is in touch with it. And if he's surrounded by people who are feeling all kinds of conflicted emotions about him, then that's what he's receiving.
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah. And so we would say, you know, well, I'm loving him, but really I'm terrified, and I feel bad, and I'm listening to voices of self-hate, and all of that is going on, but that doesn't really count because I love him so much. But those filters don't actually exist anywhere, and so it's a whole package that.
And I can see that when I'm talking to him, that when I don't know what to say to him, and I'm feeling uncomfortable, I know that he's picking it up. So
sure.
Yeah.
Much more so than most anybody else, because he.
Right.
That's part of his condition, is that he's basically a raw nerve.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad I got through. Thank you so much.
Stay close, okay?
I will.
Okay. Good.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Bernice. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Powerful work going on out there, Sherry.
There sure is. Whew. I know I say it all the time, and it's only because it's true. We got to hold hands.
We have to hold hands.
Yep.
And I'm so grateful for practice for giving me that opportunity.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you
Good night.
In about a week.
Okay, great.
Right.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.